So if you didn't keep your fingers there, turn over to Daniel chapter 1. We have been thinking about different biblical characters, and Daniel, sort of like Elisha, is too big of a character to sketch his entire life in one message. But we're just going to limit ourselves to chapter 1 and the actions of Daniel and his character that we see there at the beginning of the book. And so I'll go ahead and read it again for our memory's sake, just in case I didn't do a very good job of it before. In the year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem, and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, and of the king's seed, and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored, and skillful in all wisdom, and cunning in knowledge, and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat, and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these were of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names. For he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink. For why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall you make me endanger my head to the king. Then said Daniel to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenances be looked upon before thee, the countenance of the children of Israel, and the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, and as thou seest, deal with thy servants. So he consented to them in this matter, and proved them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat of the portion of the king's meat. Thus Melzar took away the portion of the meat and the wine that they should drink, and gave them pulse. As for these 4 children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar, and the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding, the king inquired of them. He found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. And Daniel continued even unto the first year of King Cyrus. So as we think about this, we want to sort of set the scene. If you recall, I think there's a lot of similarities here between Daniel and his 3 friends. As there was between the Syrian invasion of Israel and the young slave girl that was taken by Naaman to be a maid to his wife. Because setting the scene, you think about the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah. At one time they were one, but after Solomon's death, because of Solomon marrying so many women and setting up so many temples to false gods, God says, I'm going to divide the kingdom. And the northern kingdom goes and goes apostate basically immediately. And the southern kingdom continues to follow the Lord, although not always with their whole heart. And as they do, they go up and they go down and they follow certain paths. And the northern kingdom of Israel, at this point, when we're coming to Daniel chapter 1, the northern kingdom of Israel had been gone for close to 150 years, had no longer been in existence, had been taken away by Assyria and not restored. And so Judah then sees this. The nation of Judah sees this, and they should take stock and come to some realizations about the way that they are behaving. God warns Judah that a similar fate would befall them if they continued in the same way. He sends Jeremiah the prophet, and Jeremiah prophesies for 40 years, warning them to stop the things that they were doing. And yet, they continue on. And the fulfillment of the prophecy comes that they are going to be carried away. And here we find Nebuchadnezzar, in the beginning of this book, comes and he attacks Jerusalem. And the final destruction of Jerusalem is in 586 BC. Now, we're not quite sure if this is exactly in 586 BC with Daniel, but it's probably a little bit before that, that there was an earlier carrying away. But nonetheless, it's important to understand that the king in verse 3 says to Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he wants certain of the Israelites, certain of the young children of the Israelites, to be brought to Babylon, so that they might teach them the ways of Babylon, so that they'll follow after all the things of Babylon. And that was one of the ways that the Assyrians did it, and the Babylonians do it, and so do the Medes and the Persians, where they're making peace among all the people that they've conquered, because they mix them all up. And they take the best of the crops, and they teach them the ways of their nation. So you can think of it the way that the British Empire did that over for so many years with India, with what we now think of as Pakistan, and then other nations around the globe. In the British Empire, they were doing the same thing, coming and being in the British Army and all sorts of things of that nature. And that's exactly what is taking place here. And so they're looking for children who are well-favored. They don't have any blemishes, and they're skillful in wisdom and cunning in knowledge and understanding science, and they can understand the language. They can teach them the language of the Chaldeans and the things they want them to know for ruling the land. And so in that group are Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. People know them as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, but I prefer the Jewish names over the Babylonian names, because we don't call Daniel Belteshazzar all the time. We call him Daniel. And they're in that group. And the king has set a daily portion of food. He has set it up to so that they feel special. They feel good about what's taken place to them. Now, keep in mind, what has actually taken place? Well, their nation has been destroyed. Their city has been destroyed. It's most likely that their parents have been slain, and they have been carried to another country. And so Nebuchadnezzar says, we're going to treat them well. We're going to treat them like they have never imagined in their lives. There is most likely going to have been a siege of Jerusalem in their lives, and they were without food, they were without water, and all sorts of deprivation. And we're going to lavish them with everything that you can imagine. All the meats, all the foods, all the wine, all the food that you can think of at a king's banqueting table, that's exactly what we're going to give to these children, so that they think well of us. That's the whole purpose. That's what he's doing. And you can see how effective that would be if you had been in a land that was deprived of things as a child, to then suddenly being, oh yeah, I'm going to have steak tonight, and I'm going to have pork chops tomorrow night, and I'm going to have a chicken the next night, I'm going to have, and constantly having the best there is, or the best you could have imagined, put in front of you every single day. He does this to conquer the people. He does this to sow peace in his conquered lands. And it's effective. In every single circumstance, it's an effective policy. The Assyrians didn't fall from within. The Babylonians didn't fall from within. The Persians didn't fall from within. They're attacked from without. The places they conquer, they're ruled over. They stay underneath of them each time. You can see how effective the policy would be. But Daniel is different. And it's interesting, because we're told that Azariah, Hananiah, and Mishael go with him in what he's doing. But it's not said that they have purposed in their hearts to be different. Daniel has. He's purposed in his heart to follow and honor God. In verse 8, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's meat. Now, would it have been defiling if he would have had some chicken? Maybe not. depending on how they killed the chicken. Would it have been defiling if he would have had some beef or some lamb? Depending on how they killed it, probably not. But he didn't want to take the risk. He didn't want to take the risk that he was going to break the law of God in the things that he was eating. And so he purposed in his heart that he was not going to defile himself. And that's why it sounds to me, in the midst of such anguish that he and his friends must have been in, to be able to stand there and say, no, I'm going to trust God. I'm going to stand up for God in this place, regardless of what's going on around me. It just reminds me so much of that slave girl. Because she says, you know, I wish she were in Israel. Not because she'd be in Israel, but because he'd be healed. Well, it's a similar situation. I'm in the midst of Babylon. My family is probably dead. Daniel never sees Jerusalem again. And yet he's purposing in his heart that he's not going to change his devotion to the Lord. That's his purpose. And the first way it's borne out is with the food. It was with the food. The wine and the meat and the drink. All the things that they're going to give him, he's going to say, no, I don't want that. Because I don't know where it comes from. I don't know what it is, and I feel that I'm going to break the law of God. And so in the events of the chapter, upon arrival, he prepares these children to have this provision. And notice that this provision is for 3 years. So they're going to be receiving all of this food, but they're going to be receiving all of this education as well. And the purpose is then to bring them before Nebuchadnezzar and to say, look how good of a job we've done with all these children, not just Daniel and the other three, but from all the people that have been captured. And they're going to bring them before Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar is going to pat himself on the back because of how bright these kids are. That's the plan. And so the food is given, and it seemed like a good thing to eat, like the king eats. But Daniel knows he doesn't follow God's rules, so I'm not going to follow the king's food. And the prince, he says, now, wait a second, Daniel, this doesn't make any sense. You want to eat basically porridge, is pulse, to eat, and then drink water instead of having this amazing food. You're going to get my head chopped off. I'm going to get in trouble with the king, because when you show up before him and you look sickly, I'm in trouble. Because I'm the one that's in charge of you. But notice what God has already done in verse 9. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. God had said, you know what? I'm going to put it in the heart of the prince of the eunuchs to care greatly for Daniel and his friends. They're going to be my favorites. I'm going to do for them whatever is necessary. It sort of reminds you of Joseph when he's in prison. He is the favorite of the prison. Why? Because God has favored him. And so Daniel says, just give us a test. Just give us 10 days. Now think about it for a moment. 10 days of a particular diet isn't really that much. It's not that much. It's going to make such a drastic difference that Daniel and his three friends aren't not just not looking worse. They're looking so drastically better than their counterparts. They're fatter. That's a good thing back then. And it's like they're glowing compared to the others. And he says, well, okay, I'll let you do it. And so for 3 years, Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael only eat the pulse and drink water. They don't have the king's food. So Daniel honors God in verse 8, and God blesses him in the eyes of the eunuch. Daniel continues to honor God, eating the same food for 3 years. I get tired of the same food after 2 days. He eats the same thing for 3 years. And God honors him. Because at the end of that time, there's no one like them. You see what he says. As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. That's during those 3 years that God blesses them in that way. They're honoring God, and God honors them. And at the end of it, the end of the days, Nebuchadnezzar calls all these ones together as they should, and he brings, the prince of the eunuchs brings these four in front of them, and they look better than anybody. Not only do they look better, they speak better. Not only do they speak better, their minds work better. So much so, it says in verse 20, "And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better, not of the other children that were carried away, but 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were already in his realm." So he's got his best counselor here. He's got the vizier, or whatever they call them. He's sitting next to him, and he asks these kids questions, and they give him better wisdom than his best counselor does. 10 times better. He's like, "What? I'm getting rid of you, and you're in his place." That's what he's going to do automatically. And at this point, we would guess that Daniel is probably in the range of 16, 17, or 18 years old. And he's going to get put into such a place by Nebuchadnezzar. That's God honoring him in such an amazing way. So in this situation, one thing that we have to take note of is that this story, this narrative, being true, is not a diet story. It's not about the foods you do and do not eat. Now, certainly we should have a good diet and take care of our bodies. That's not my point. But my point is, this is not about the food that Daniel did eat and the food that he didn't eat. Now, I don't know what the king's meals were. Nebuchadnezzar lived reportedly a very good long life. So his meals didn't do him any great harm. It's not like Henry VIII who ate himself to an early grave. That's not the scenario. Pulse and water is not sufficient to sustain people in a normal basis, in a normal situation. You need more than that. This isn't a diet story. This is a story of honoring God and Him honoring the individuals. It's a story of drawing closer to God. And it's an example of what we're taught differently in the New Testament. In James chapter 4, James says in verse 6, he says, "But he giveth more grace. Wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. Submit yourselves therefore to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded. Be afflicted, and mourn, and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning, and your joy to heaviness. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up." Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael could have said, "You know what? We must be pretty special, because we were chosen by the prince of the eunuchs to be carried away as a special group of people to get the king's meals, to get the king's food, to get nice clothes, to live in the palace, to get this great learning. We're special. We're better than everybody else." That's most likely what everybody else felt like. That was the purpose of the way they did it. And it probably worked for everybody. But what did Daniel and his three friends do? They humbled themselves in the sight of the Lord. They humbled themselves and they said, no, we don't want this food. We want something that we know is not going to be contradictory to the law of God. So we're going to have pulse and water, because we know there's no way you can mess that up. Now we know that's not against the dietary laws. So we're going to honor God in this little thing. And what does God do? He lifts them up. They humbled themselves before the Lord, and he lifted them up. They drew nigh to God. And what does God do? Draws nigh unto them. Now, I'm not telling you that you're going to receive a kingdom, or be put into such a position, or have great wisdom beyond your peers, as Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael did. But I can tell you this, when God makes a promise, he fulfills the promise. When God says, if you draw nigh to him, he will draw nigh to you, you can bank on it. That's exactly what he'll do. It is on grand display in Daniel chapter 1. It's on grand display in many places, but it's certainly there in Daniel chapter 1. Daniel purposed in his heart, God drew closer to him by putting him in favor of the eunuch. When he says 10 days, he blesses him. And then he blesses him even further, gives him even more wisdom and knowledge and understanding and interpretation of dreams, so that those four young men are wiser than the 10 times wiser than the wisest individual in the kingdom. And this kingdom is ruling, at this point, is ruling over Assyria, Israel, Judah, parts of Egypt, all of the Arabian Peninsula, parts of Persia. It's ruling the then world. And Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael are 10 times smarter than everybody else. That is not natural. That is God moving and working. God can do amazing things, and he does amazing things when you draw nigh to him. He resists the proud, and he blesses the humble. He lifts them up. And not only does he do that, he helps because he gives you the strength to resist the devil. It's an amazing consequence, an amazing thing that takes place. We're not looking later on in Daniel, but you may remember that Daniel later on, he's much older at this point. He's praying for Jerusalem, and because he knows that it's about the time that there's going to be ascending back. And he's praying, and then suddenly the angel comes, and the angel says, "I just want to reassure you that I was sent out when you started to pray. But it's been 3 months that the angel arrived. Why? Because the angel was contending with the prince of Persia, who a demonic influence. The demonic influence wasn't coming after Daniel, was it? It was fighting with the angel. You see, Daniel drew nigh to God, and the devil couldn't come near. It's an amazing situation. When God is with you, who can stand against you? No one can. Satan can't. Because you're standing with God. God is standing with you. And so the question then comes, well, we can't expect to be given exactly what Daniel was given. We're not going to have such wisdom and knowledge and understanding. Maybe someone will. I can't say maybe. You never know. But I can say, without a shadow of a doubt, if you purpose in your heart to draw close to God, he will draw close to you. And that doesn't mean your circumstances will work out in your favor, because guess what? Neither Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, or Mishael ever saw Jerusalem again. It would have been the desire of their heart to see Jerusalem again. They never did. Their circumstances were completely different for the rest of their lives than they could have imagined before Nebuchadnezzar came. But God was with them every step of the way. There's a hymn that I wanted to sing, but we couldn't sing it because it's not in our hymnal. Therefore, we don't have music for it. And so I'm going to read it to you. Standing by a purpose true, heeding God's command, honor them, the faithful few, all hail to Daniel's band. Dare to be a Daniel, dare to stand alone, dare to have a purpose firm, and dare to make it known. That's what it's about. It's not praising Daniel, it's praising the God of Daniel, and it's standing for the God of Daniel just as he did. Because as we draw close to him, he draws close to us. He's never gone, but sometimes he might feel far away. Why? Because we haven't drawn close to him. And as we do, he will be there for us. So hold the banner, the gospel banner high. On to victory grand, Satan and his host defy, and shout for Daniel's band. We point you to Jesus Christ today. Amen.